All right, guys, I'd like for you to turn in your Bibles to Mark chapter 7. We're going to be looking at verses 24 through 37. Mark chapter 7. We're going through the Gospel of Mark, trying to understand Jesus and trying to look at what it is telling us about Jesus and helping us to understand him and how he interacts in our life. And today we're going to come upon two stories, two incidents that happens in the life of Jesus. One is with a Canaanite woman, and the other is with a deaf, mute fellow that he heals. Now, I preached through Mark 20 years ago, so I was kind of wondering about this section of passages, and I was going back to my old messages. I do this every once in a while to see how did I approach this passage before, and I realized, are you ready for this? I didn't preach on this passage the last time. Well, that's interesting. Why didn't you preach on it? Well, because I didn't know how to approach them. But I did this time, okay? So we're going to look at them today. And the thought occurred to me, this is what happens sometimes, is that we read these stories, and we just read them, and we're like, oh, Jesus is great, but we kind of miss that there's something more happening here. And what we're going to see is, from these two stories, that the emphasis is, like with the first, faith. The importance of faith. And then with the second, the issue of wholeness. Now that has significance for you and I in our lives. Because the fact is, you and I, as we live our lives, stuff happens around us, right? Some of them are the consequences of the things that we do. Some of them are not. They just happen out of nowhere. Some of them, they are just things that happen to us. The others are things that happen to all of us at the same time. We just went through that 5 years ago with COVID. That affected every one of us, right? With the lockdowns and everything. How do we approach that? Some of these things happen, and so we sit there and we wonder, how do we respond to this? Where's God in the midst of this? And what can God do? And I think the first story kind of helps us with that, because sometimes it seems like God's got other things he's got going on, right? What about me? So let's take a look at this passage together. We're going to read them together. If you have your Bibles, you can look with me starting at verse 24, and we'll go through the end of the chapter. Here is what Mark records. From there he arose and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. But immediately a woman, whose little daughter had an unclean spirit, heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. Now the woman was a Gentile, a Syro-Phoenician by birth. She begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it's not the right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And he said to her, "For this statement, you go your way, the demon has left your daughter." And she went home and found the child lying in bed and the demon gone. Then he returned from the region of Tyre and went through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee, to the region of Decapolis. And they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment, and begged him to lay his hand on him. Taking him aside from the crowd privately, he put his fingers into his ear, and then spitting, he touched his tongue. And looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Epaphatha, that is, be open. And his ears were open, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. And Jesus charged them to tell no one. But the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. All right, so we're going to take these two stories, and that's going to be our two sections, okay? So we're going to approach these things and try to learn what we can from them. So let me tell you what's happening with the first one. So Jesus takes his disciples, and he wants to go away to teach them, to spend some time alone with them. So guess where he has to go? He's got everybody seeking after him. So he decides to go out of the area, out of Israel. Where does he go? To Tyre and Sidon. Now, what is that? That would be what we know of as modern-day Lebanon today. So he goes to a Gentile area to get alone with his disciples. Why? Because could he meet with his disciples and not be pressed if he just stayed in northern Israel? No. Everybody wants him to come and what? Heal their sick or heal whoever's around him. He wants to spend some time. Now, why would he want to spend time with them? He's teaching his disciples. Okay? So here's what happens. He's up there, and the word gets out that he's here because people have heard about this miracle worker, this teacher who comes and who does the amazing things. And so there's a woman. Now, Mark refers to her as Syrophoenician. That's talking about the reality of her political thing as far as where she's from. Matthew refers to her as a Canaanite, meaning an old enemy of Israel. That is the people group that she's from. Whatever, she's coming. She's not Jewish. And she shows up and she's begging Jesus, which you and I would do, right? Begging Jesus to what? Heal her child. So that's the first thing I want you to see is the woman knows that Jesus can heal her daughter. Now I want you to understand that. The woman only knows that Jesus can heal her daughter. She doesn't have any concept of a Jewish Messiah. She doesn't have any concept of being a son of David, which is a messianic title. She doesn't have any concept of the Jewish laws or any of that. She's a Gentile. She wouldn't need to know that, right? But the one thing she knows is that Jesus can heal her daughter. Heal her daughter by casting this demon away. So that's what she wants. So she comes to Jesus. Now, the text tells us something interesting. If you read it, you kind of think that Jesus is being mean and cruel here. What do you mean? Well, let's take a look at the passage, okay? Tell me if you don't think this is harsh. Here's what he says. And he said to her, "Let the children be fed first, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." If you read that at first, you kind of wonder, wow, Jesus, that's kind of weird because you're calling her a dog, which the Jews did, by the way. The Jews did refer to Gentiles as dogs. But there's something that doesn't come out of our English translation. The word dog here is not like a vicious animal. It's actually like a house pet. You ever have dogs in your home? Some of you have dogs in your home, right? What do dogs in your home do when you're eating at the table with groups of friends? Do they hang out in the back room or are they around your table? Are they around your table? When I grew up with a dog in a house, it was always around the table, always going from one person to another, wanting what? A scrap of something. And usually kids will do what? Even though mom and dad tell them, don't give the dog anything, they always tend to what? Reach up and grab something and hold it under the table for the dog to get. This is the picture of what's going on here. But Jesus is saying to her, look, what I'm doing is I have bread for the children, meaning for his people, for Israel, for his disciples. It's not what I'm here for. It's for them. It's not for you. But she kind of answers him in a way that he responds to. What do you mean? So first thing I want you to see here is that Jesus points out what his primary focus is. What's his primary focus? His primary focus is to go where? To the Jews and tell them who he is. And that's what he's telling her. But here's what she does. Acknowledging her position, she only makes a small request. So here's what she's saying. She's not disputing him, saying, I'm not a dog. She's not like we would do today. Don't call me that. She's not saying that. She says, even the dogs at the children's feet pick up the crumbs. Meaning that even the dogs get something. That's all I'm asking, is that I get something. And that catches Jesus' attention. Because here's a woman, first of all, she doesn't know who he is completely. She just knows that he can heal. She doesn't understand what his mission is. She just knows that he can heal. And she's hearing him, and he's saying to her, I have these people to come to first. This is my primary focus. She understands that, but she says, I just want a leftover. Why would she say that? Because she believes that he can heal. And that he can just give her a leftover. So what happens? Jesus responds to her statement of faith. Look at what he says here. I think this is interesting. He says, and he said to her, for this statement, you may go your way. The demon has left your daughter. What statement? That statement of faith that even the dogs get the crumbs. They get the leftovers. That's all I want. Now, what's that got to do with you and I, with this first story? What has that got to do with you and I? What do you believe about him? Is he God or isn't he? Does he bring salvation or doesn't he? Does he give forgiveness or doesn't he? Can he work through the issues of your life, whatever the result may be, or can he not? See, these are questions that reflect something about what you believe. And if you believe, you'll be like the woman. She wasn't taking no for an answer, wasn't she? Do you see the boldness of her faith here? She wasn't taking no for an answer. Some of us, we give up too quickly in prayer. Too quickly. Which reminds me, 2 years ago, God answering a prayer through a phone call from a guy that I prayed 30 years for. On and off for 30 years that he would come to know Jesus. And then finding out just a few weeks before he died of cancer that he did come back to Jesus. Isn't that interesting? God still hears us. The question is, did I give up too soon? Did I believe? Let me tell you something, what that ended up stirring me is that I have a whole list of people that I have met through life, that I have prayed for occasionally, that sometimes come to mind, and I don't just blow it off and say, oh, well, you know, I did pray for them. No, I pray when God brings them to mind because, Lord, I still believe that you can do whatever. It's a question of faith. Faith. Mark is continually talking about what? Faith. So that's the first story, okay? This woman, this Canaanite Gentile woman, and her faith. And listen to me, She doesn't even know everything about him. But she has faith in him. Isn't that awesome? Let's get to the second story now. So the second story, Jesus leaves there. Obviously, he would have to, okay? He leaves there, crosses the Sea of Galilee, and comes to the Decapolis area, which, again, is near Israel. It's on the other side of the Sea of Galilee towards the east, and it is a Gentile community as well. He gets there. People are excited about him being there. They want him to do the miracles that he has done in other places, and so they bring to him a guy who is deaf, but he also has a speech impediment. Scripture refers to it as being mute. We understand that. If you can't hear anything, how are you going to learn how to speak properly, right? And so with this story, we see the whole issue of wholeness, about Jesus' focus on wholeness. What do you mean? Well, let's see a couple things here. First thing I want you to see is that when we see this, is I want you to notice with me verse 33. Look at what it says. And taking him aside from the crowd privately. I just want to focus on that for a moment. It's interesting to me that Jesus, who everybody's going wild over, who's done all these great miracles and stuff, has this guy brought to him who's a deaf mute, and the reality is Jesus then takes him aside privately, away from the crowd. Isn't that interesting? And that talks about who Jesus is. What do you mean? Well, here's what I want you to see. The reality is this. Jesus is not interested in putting on a show. He's not interested in putting on a show. Now, this needs to be something you and I need to grasp, okay? Because we want God to do what in our lives? We want him to do the spectacular, right? We want him to show up in a mighty way and let everybody else see that my God is there for me. He solved this problem. Praise be to God. Do you see my God is real? That's not how he acts. Takes this guy away privately. We've already seen it once before with the synagogue ruler's daughter who died. He put everybody out but his disciples, some of his disciples, and her parents. Everybody else had to wait outside while he healed. He's not interested in a big show. In fact, with that story, the same thing happens. He tells them, as he's telling these folks later, don't say anything about it. Don't tell anybody. Isn't that amazing? Jesus isn't interested in putting on a big show. Man, so different than our culture today. Because your social media is filled with people. As soon as they do something great, what do? Post it. Take a video of it. Promote it. Do you see what I'm saying? This is not Jesus. He's not an influencer, to use that modern term. Although he has influence, right? This is the reality. So the next thing I want you to see is that he heals the man of his problems. Now, this is one of the instances in the Gospels where Jesus does something. Do you ever notice that whenever he heals somebody, he always does it different in every way? It's not always the same thing, like speaking the word or touching them, but he does touch him. He puts his fingers in the guy's ears. And then it says, are you ready for this? This is gross to me. He spits and touches the guy's tongue with his spit. Ooh. That's not healthy. But that's Jesus, okay. And then what happens? The guy is what? Healed. Big lesson here. Some of us have to get to the place of quit telling God how to solve our problems and let him do it the way he wants to do it, right? Because I'm a problem solver. I always think of, when I pray, I always give him 5-10 steps to do. Got to work in this situation, make this guy think this way, have it be like this, the sun needs to be in this position in the sky, whatever. I'm sitting there trying to tell him how to do it when I just need to let him what? Do it. Even if it means touching somebody's tongue with spit. He heals. He heals the man of his problem. The other thing I want you to see is, what does he immediately do? Look at verse 36. Okay, he does this. Look at verse 36. I just get blown away every time I read this. And Jesus charged them to tell no one. But the more he charged them, the more zealously they proclaimed it. He charges them. What does that mean? He's commanding them. He's saying to them, listen to me. Don't tell anyone. Now, how do you do that when the guy's with you is deaf and mute? It's not like it's not obvious to people, right? It's not like in a community when you have somebody who's deaf and who's mute, people don't know that, right? And then all of a sudden he's hearing and speaking normal? I mean, seriously. How do you not tell people that? People are going to ask, what happened to Joe here? He couldn't. Joe's different. What happened to him? Oh, nothing. It just happened. No, listen. People are going to speak, right? This is the point I want you to see. Let the facts concerning the Lord's work speak for themselves. That's the whole issue here. But they can't help but what? Share about it. That brings us to the next thing we need to look at here. Here it is. They proclaimed what Jesus had done for them. They proclaimed what Jesus had done for them. They told everyone. And look at what their final statement is here. And they were astonished, verse 37, beyond all measure, saying, he has done all things well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. That's their testimony. Now, I have to admit that as I was reading this, I got kind of rebuked in my spirit. I got convicted because I'm not like them. My tendency is not to tell anybody anything. Maybe that's my personality or whatever. Maybe it's just I'm a private person or whatever. But the reality is, I see God do amazing things all the time and answers to prayer and everything all the time. Things that are very obvious that were Him. Things that were very obvious. That, like, for instance, the other day, I was working on a project that we were having around the house, and I was taking a storm door off, an old storm door. Lori was repainting it, and I took all the parts off, and I put all the parts so I could put it back up in one place. I was trying to be doing the right thing so that I could have everything in place. So when I put it back up, it would all be there. So I put the door back up and everything, and I'm getting ready to put everything back together. And I realized that there was this one wee little part missing. So I looked everywhere, and I couldn't find it. I had to put the chain up. You know, on a storm door, sometimes you have a chain, and it was the part that hooks to the frame and everything, and I couldn't find that wee little part. So I just said, oh, I'm going to have to go over to the hardware and buy another one. Oh, I can't believe I did that. And I thought, well, it's you, George. That's typical for you. So I go over there to the hardware, and I walk in, and I see a guy that I had thought about 2 weeks before. And he said, hey, I've been thinking about you. Oh, that's interesting. So was I. We'll get together next week. So I paid for my part, went home to put it on, but I thought this, God, I was supposed to miss that part. You had a divine appointment for me today. I was supposed to be there today at that time to see that individual. Now, the problem is, I did tell Lori that so that I wouldn't be in trouble to go buy something and lose a part, you know what I'm saying? But I recognized that God did something. But my tendency is not normally to say anything about it. This is what I want you to see. God works in your life every day, does he not? Does he not answer your prayers? Does he not do spectacular things? And I'm not saying that you wear a t-shirt that you change every day that says, this is what God did for me today. I'm just saying that as you go about your normal conversations with people, you can testify that your God is alive. And he does things well. Is that not what they say? He does things well. But see, the question is, let's go back to the first woman that we looked at. Do we believe that he does things well? Do we have faith? So as we leave this passage before we progress on, because we're getting ready to come to a turning point in the story as we look at Jesus' ministry, as we get ready to go into chapter 8, and then the story shifts to the whole issue of going to Jerusalem. The issue is, do you have faith? Do you believe him? And if you believe him, is that impacting you? And if it's impacting you, are you telling others? Are you telling others? Let me pray for you.